We do it once every month, but... we got a special theme today. What is that? Oh, no. All right. Now, I'm playing that, and my first guest, my two guests, in fact, are probably thinking, what the heck are you doing? Jaws ruins everything about sharks. But we're going to go there today. So that by we, I mean myself. I'm with Dr. Abby Scott. Hello.
Hello. Good to be here. I'm excited to talk sharks.
Yes. And, of course, because it's Shark Week. But also, in a moment, we're going to check in with one of Australia's most prominent individuals with shark knowledge, and that is Colin Simpfendorfer. But also... and we're going to check in with Lauren Rosewarne, who's usually on this show, about the damage that Jaws did to the rep of the shark. It feels like it's forever. Damage is done. Can't undo it.
Oh, I don't know about that. I guess we'll have to find out.
And it's awkward for me because I actually, my all-time favourite film is Jaws.
Okay. So, and are you scared of sharks, though?
Absolutely terrified.
Okay, right.
And I blame the film because you're always telling me you're underwater. I saw you... your pictures on Twitter, by the way, of your whale encounters. I would see the whale in a distance and assume it's a shark, get the heck out of the water. I'm terrible, really bad.
Okay, well, we did also see a few sharks on that whale trip, so...
and that's the thing, is that, I mean, look, I don't want to discount or sound crass about the fact that there are people who have lost their lives with shark attacks.
Yes.
For sure, but percentage-wise, you know, the rep they get, is nowhere near... You'll see 20, 50, 80, 100 sharks and you're still sitting here, right? With all your limbs.
Yeah, and the probability of getting killed by a shark is so low. You're more likely to be hit on the road. You're more likely to get stuck in a toilet. You know, it is... it's really...
Is that an actual
statistic? Yeah, there's quite a few things, statistics you can look up of things that are more likely to happen to you than getting killed by a shark. So,
wow.
I think you just have to, you know, bear that in mind. And you're going into their habitat, so have a bit of respect and be a bit careful. But I think what people forget is how amazing these animals are, and that kind of gets lost, and we've just really demonised them. And that's not to say that some sharks aren't dangerous,
no,
for sure.
For sure. I mean, the megalodon, for example, is very dangerous.
Extinct. But yeah. Yes. Yes, so we do have dangerous sharks, but I think in Queensland we're very good at living with dangerous animals, and we maybe just need to understand a bit more about what makes sharks so amazing and understand that they are actually quite threatened and they're really important in those ecosystems.
Most definitely. And one of the topics, and this is why my next guest needs to be introduced, is I want to talk about shark finning,
yeah.
Mostly because it's something I don't know much about. I've heard of shark fin soup. Apparently it's a delicacy in other countries that has seemingly no taste, but it's like a status thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I don't know about the taste, but it's definitely a status thing, and it's definitely something that's taken off in recent years, but I'm sure our next guest can tell us a bit more about it.
Yeah, I'll put my hand up. I've tried it. Because
really?
It was about 10 years ago, I was at an Asian restaurant, and the people who were paying, you know, I was a guest, said, look, it's on the menu. It was like $35 for a bowl.
Wow.
And they said, I'm going to order one. I'm like, you know, I can't say I agree, but I can't stop you. And then I said, do you mind if I just dip my... spooning. I have to try it. It's there in front of me. And it reminded me of miso soup. You can get a packet for a buck. That's all it tasted like.
It's all about the status and those perceived benefits, which they're not really, there's no benefit to it. Yeah.
Yeah. However, Professor Colin Simpfendorfer is Professor of Marine Biology in the College of Science and Engineering, and, Abby, he was the co-chair of the International Unions for Conservation of Nature's Shark Specialist Group from 2012 to 2020. This man knows sharks.
Absolutely.
Colin Simpfendorfer, how are you this morning, sir?
I'm very well, thanks, Phil, and g'day, Abby.
Hey.
And we should point out, Colin, you get this for a move. Would you do this? Used to live in Cairns, moved to Tasmania. Why would you do that, sir?
It's a long and complicated story, but I actually loving it down here, and the weather's cold but beautiful at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's you do live in a beautiful part of the world. So, Colin Simpfendorfer, there was a report recently saying that Australia was pretty ordinary at as far as how much shark finning goes on. But it seems from something I saw that you published saying not necessarily the case. What's happened?
So at the end of last year, a group of scientists from California published a paper that analysed some data about sharks and where they occur, and concluded that Australia was actually the major source of shark fins in the trade globally, which is obviously a group of us got together and said that's just not factually true. We know how much shark is caught in Australia, and that's just it's just not possible. And so we actually went through the process of looking at what they did, and just coming out yesterday was our response to their work, which basically shows that they made a bunch of erroneous assumptions about their methodology, and so ended up with some problems with their results.
Wow. So, I mean, we have to ask, what is the status of shark finning in Australia? Surely you're not saying it doesn't exist at all.
So in fact, what doesn't occur, so it's important to make some definitions here. Shark finning is actually a fairly wasteful and cruel practice. That's shark finning. The technical definition is cutting the fins off at sea and throwing the animal back alive into the water to basically die because it has no fins. That's shark finning. Sharks are caught for both a whole range of products, especially meat and their fins, and but there are regulations that stop them doing from actually shark finning. So we do produce fins, but they're not produced in that cruel way that is shark finning.
Okay. So the illegal type then, I suppose, is what I was concerned about then. Are you saying it's fairly low and presumably well policed? I don't know.
Absolutely. Here in Australia, we have some fairly strong regulations about how fishers are able to land their sharks. And in most jurisdictions now, they need to land their sharks with their fins still attached so that they obviously can demonstrate that they haven't been finning the sharks.
So what is the status of the shark populations in Australia? Are they under pressure from fishing? Or, I mean, there's declines worldwide. Are we seeing the same things in Queensland and Australia?
Globally, we have a real major problem with our shark populations. You know, there are more than more than a third of them are now threatened with extinction. And so globally, that's a major problem. The good news in Australia is we actually do a very good job managing our sharks. And so there are, while we have a few species that have some problems and we're working on fixing those, by and large, the status of sharks in Australia is much better than it is globally. And so we're actually, you know, lucky that we can go, you know, diving on the Great Barrier Reef, for example, and see lots of sharks, you know, fairly easily. You can't do that in a lot of other countries.
And I have heard anecdotally, I've talked about this topic a lot, you know, in chats on drumlines and things like that, and we get fishers on who say, and we had a text release saying, you know, it's so hard to reel in a big catch on a fish without a shark harassing you. So in some places on the reef, they really are abundant, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, you know, and all around Australia, particularly across northern Australia, historically, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, Taiwanese and other nations sent gill netters, you know, to fish for sharks. And our populations actually went down quite steeply. But since they've left in the mid-80s, you know, we've seen populations of sharks in northern Australia bounce back very strongly and are in some places back at their original levels.
That's good
news.
Wow,
yeah, that's amazing.
So, Colin, I know we wanted to touch briefly on fins, but we kind of want to touch briefly on Shark 101 as well, because you're a good man to ask. Do you mind if we do that with you?
Oh, absolutely, go for it.
Well, let's get a few obvious ones out of the way. For starters, one of the most common sharks that we might encounter off where we live, on the east coast of Queensland?
So on the east coast of Queensland, if you go out to the reef, you're going to see things like grey reef sharks, white-tip reef sharks. You know, they're fairly obvious ones you see when you're diving. They'll often come and harass you when you're fishing and try and take your fish off the line. But you're going close to the coast, there's a whole range of other species that you will potentially run into. You may not see them very often, but things like the giant shovel nose, the white spot guitar fish, Australian sharp nose shark. It's a tiny little shark, only grows to 70 centimetres in length, but extremely abundant all the way along the Queensland coast.
What's an epaulette? Is it epaulette shark?
Those two, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Very common out on the reef. Anywhere you find a bit of hard structure. They're a small shark, grows to about a metre, but they sit on the bottom. They've got that sort of white colour with brown spots, and they've got their epaulette, like, you know, epaulette on a uniform. They have these epaulette spots on the sides of their heads. And they basically sit around coral. They actually live inside coral bommies, these sorts of things. And they can actually walk. When they just walk moving slowly, they'll actually use their fins to walk on the bottom.
Why hasn't Jason Statham made a movie about walking sharks yet? That's got to be been the worst, hasn't it?
It's the next Sharknado for sure.
They're an amazing shark, and I am a little biased. My wife actually did her PhD on epaulette sharks many, many years ago.
So I was going to ask you what your favourite shark species is, but would it be that one?
Oh, well, no, definitely not. I find it hard to pick. I've worked on a lot of different sharks over the years, but I always keep coming back to the one I did my PhD on, which is the Australian sharp-nosed shark. It's that little shark really common along the east coast of Queensland, but it's got one of the really fascinating reproductive stories. Essentially, they can actually delay the development of their embryos by 7 months every year and have this arrested sort of development phase, which is very unusual in sharks and, in fact, unusual in animals worldwide.
That's amazing. So you're like, yeah, I'm pregnant, but I might just hold off on this for a few months because I've just got some other stuff to do.
You know, it's an extremely common shark, and every single one of the females of every single one of those sharks on the Queensland coast will basically do that. They'll hold the young, you know, the embryos at a very early stage for that 7.5 months, and on the same day, essentially, you know, along the Queensland coast, they'll start development again.
Colin, we're going to go down where the second part of the chat here with the bad rep that sharks get, but is their behaviour that humans do in water that is more likely to attract a shark? Because people say this stuff all the time, so I'm just going to ask you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's, you know, and Abby touched on it earlier. It's about understanding, you know, what these species, you know, what sharks are up to, what they do, but also what we do and how that influences them. So, for example, if we're fishing, you know, and we've got bait in the water or we're chumming, anything like that, obviously that has the potential to attract sharks. Similarly, if we're swimming around, you know, schools of fish, you know, again, they're going to attract sharks. So when you get into the water, it's about looking around and working out what are the factors that may influence whether sharks are around. Doesn't mean, you know, chances are sharks are going to be around. It's whether they're around and feeding and you know, whether they're going to show any interest in you.
Yeah, it's kind of about what types of sharks are around and kind of what their behaviour is like. And I guess not getting into high-risk environments, you know, where there might be bull sharks in estuaries or where the water's really murky. Simple things like that, I guess.
Oh, exactly. You know, and in Northern Australia, you know, some of the more dangerous places, you know, we don't go into anyway because crocodiles. Box jellyfish, you know, they keep us out of the water in a whole lot of places, and you know, we don't actually see a lot of shark bites occurring in Northern Australia for those reasons.
Yeah, and there's another two species you were talking at the top of the show about other stuff that you're more likely to encounter, but I did do a bit of a search on that as well. Yeah, you mentioned crocodiles. You're more likely to die of a crocodile attack than a shark attack, but also bees.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
bees.
And of course, mosquitoes are, you know, the world's biggest killer, but yeah, shark attack.
The risk from shark, you know, from dying from a shark bite is extremely low, and you know, it's one of those things. As somebody who goes out on in the ocean very regularly, you know, you have to, you know, you think about what the risk is. How do you reduce that risk? And then at that point, that's all you can do, and go have fun and enjoy it because you're gonna be fine.
Yeah, and accept that when you're going into the sea, you're going into their habitat. And also, if you see a shark, you know, you don't need to freak out. You just stay calm, watch it, see what's happening. It's not likely to be something that's coming straight at you. And also, if you're not seeing sharks, it doesn't mean that they're not there. They probably are, but they're just not that interested in you. They're just swimming around, doing their business and just, you know, kind of enjoy it and just take a sit back, take a breath. You know, like I have to do when I see a sea snake, and just be calm and really just take it in, because we're lucky to be able to see these animals and be in their habitat. And and it's a privilege, really, honestly.
It is. All right. So, Colin Simpfendorfer, I've got one final question for you, which will be a transition to our next topic. And that is, we're going to talk about the movie Jaws and the subsequent films about sharks. What are your thoughts if I say, has Jaws and its sequels ruined the reputation of a shark forever?
Whether it's forever, I don't know, but certainly, you know, Jaws was one of those seminal moments in humanity that, you know, really changed how people view sharks and the risk that sharks present. It's all built on, you know, misinformation, and it's not true, but, you know, those very graphic images and the drama that Jaws creates, you know, it's an extremely well-made movie and does its job well, you know, creates that fear. The trouble is that's persisted, you know, Phil, I think you're a great example of it. You know, it's shaped how our brains, you know, think about these things.
Happy Shark Week, Colin Simpfendorfer. We really appreciate you checking in with us. It's been great.
Not a problem, Phil. Abby, great to chat as always.
Thanks.
Bye. You're listening to Wild Science. I'm Phil Staley. I'm with Dr. Abby Scott, and we thought we'd focus on sharks because it is Shark Week. Talking about at the top of the show, this movie, and... my example, I'm scared. I remember scuba diving on the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah.
Green Island. And one of them is a black tip reef shark. Is
yeah,
that what
yeah,
it's called?
I've seen a lot of those off Green Island.
It would have been about... Hang on. Jeez. Hang on, I'll just introduce Lauren. Sorry. Lauren, that's some heck of an intro music you got there. How are you?
I'm very well. Hello.
Sorry, I hung up on you there a minute ago.
Look, I'm not going to take it personally. That's fine. I know you get overwhelmed with the Jaws music.
You know I love it.
It overstimulates you.
Yeah, it does. I get excited. Lauren Rosewarne, Associate Professor from the University of Melbourne, a regular guest on this show, and I'm with Dr. Abby Scott as well. Talking about Jaws and the damage it's done, I'll finish that story. Snorkeling, Green Island,
yes.
Black tip reef shark swim past. I didn't notice it, and my wife taps me on the shoulder, turns around and says, look at that, and it's about 2 feet from my head, and it doesn't care less about me. It's not even looking, it's just boo, you know, moving apart.
Yeah.
I probably ran over the top of the water going, shark, shark. And, you know, there's some overseas tourists thinking, what the heck, you know, I'll probably cause a commotion.
Right.
I don't know, that visceral instinct to just get out, I'm going to be eaten like Captain Flint from Jaws,
okay,
went through my head. And I put it down, Lauren, to my, it's my favourite film.
Your love of Jaws.
So how much damage, Lauren, you come from the film and TV study world, how much damage do you reckon it's done?
Yeah, it's done a lot of damage. Kind of like, for example, the branding problem that, say, Psycho did for shower curtains, right? There's a lot of people who now couple the two, right? They think sharks, they think danger, they think, you know, tearing people apart. Shower curtains, they think stab, stab, stab. So I think that there is a permanent coupling that occurs between the two things, absolutely.
You hear it, though, right? I mean, as far as a powerful movie, we're talking about a Steven Spielberg film.
Yeah.
You can be in a pool and go, dun, dun. And a little kid will get scared and run out. You got to admit, it's probably one of the most powerful films of all time.
Oh, yeah, not to mention the, you know, almost the icon that has become the idea of the sort of shark fin moving through the water. And that idea that, you know, couple that with the music, it creates that sense of terror and recaptures what you felt at the time of watching the film. And this is why we're disproportionately fearful of sharks, because we were disproportionately fearful of the film as opposed to the actual danger that sharks pose for us.
So as humans then, why are we attracted to watching this sort of stuff? Because the poster makes it pretty clear what you're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, why do people go and see horror films, slasher films, you know? And I think one of the big ones is that it's an adrenaline, you know, it's a hit of adrenaline. People like to do things that take themselves outside of their ordinary range of feelings. Most of us don't go through our day, fortunately, being fearful for our lives. And this is the luxury that we've got, you know, living not in a war zone, where we actually pay to have some of those horrible, grueling experiences. You know, we pay to see them in, you know, other places in the world. People don't do it because their lives are much more dangerous than ours.
So, Abby, honestly, have you seen it?
Jaws?
Yeah.
No.
You haven't seen it?
I've seen bits. Sorry, but I'm not scared of sharks, so maybe that proves the point.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, apologies to my dear mum in England, but I remember watching it. This is awful parenting. I was four.
Yeah.
I should not have been watching Jaws when I was four. And I was terrified. I curled up on her lap watching it. I probably saw maybe 20 minutes of it because, yeah, you know, you just can't watch. But upstairs we went to bed, and down the hallway was the bathroom. And because that had taps, I thought Jaws was coming to get me as a four-year-old.
Wow, you're really traumatised.
But do you honestly think if you watched it, it would change how you react? Because it's pretty graphic.
I don't think it would now, but yeah, I think if you're somebody who hasn't seen a lot of sharks and you watch it when you're younger or whatever, then I think, yeah, like you, for you and for a lot of other people as well, it's had a huge impact on a lot of people that aren't really that connected with the water and whatever. I mean, I've always wanted to be a marine biologist, and I went cage diving with sharks, great white sharks, when I was about 16. I dragged my friends to come with me and they wouldn't get in the water, but I was adamant that I was going to go and look a great white shark in the eye. So I don't think it would have changed my perception. But
wow. Well, what about you, Lauren? You've seen it. I presume you've seen it.
I'm kind of like Abby. bits and pieces.
Yeah, and you know what it's about. But when you're in the water then, I don't know how often you frequent the beach, but is it a thing that you think about?
I don't like the outdoors, Phil. We've discussed this before. I don't like sunshine or anything to do with the elements. That said, I have obviously been in the ocean. No, it's not something I think about acutely, but I imagine that, you know, again, had I watched it as many times as you have, I potentially would have a different feeling. But you're right, that is a really good point that Abby mentioned about the fact that most people don't have much contact with sharks. That film brings it out of, you know, out of proportion, because the film makes it sound like, you know, this could happen to you on any ordinary beach in summertime.
Well, and there was no counterpoint. I mean, what was technology like in 1976? This film came out. Yep. What did you honestly know about sharks if you're sitting anywhere, not on the coast? That was your first sight of a shark, and it was eating people.
Well, and they
couldn't just Google the odds.
they had Australian filmmakers helping with the in-water. Ron and Valerie Taylor were those people who were helping with the in-water stuff for Jaws.
Right.
And they started off as spearfishers who were even taking sharks. But by the time they were helping to make Jaws, they were, you know, conservationists, and they didn't believe in this danger. And after the film came out, they went around America, because the hype was particularly bad in America around being afraid of sharks. And they went and told people that, you know, this wasn't a real fear that you needed on beaches every day. But it just didn't seem to work. And, you know, ever since that point, I think everyone who was involved in the film, and those guys in particular, have realized that it's had a bad image for sharks. And it's had, these... They've been avid conservationists to try and educate people about sharks and the problems around them, and that they're not that dangerous. We don't need to be scared every time we go in the water.
Yeah. I'm starting to think with all this chat that it's just me and I need some sort of counselling. I shouldn't have watched it so much as a
child.
Did it
really take this long to bring you to that, that revelation?
Well, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen this, and if you haven't seen Jaws, then you haven't, but there's another old Aussie movie called Razorback.
Yes.
Right? You know the one?
I do.
And it's pretty much the same premise as Jaws, except it's this big wild boar that's enormous. And in your outback Queensland, and it, like, surprisingly wasn't a box office hit.
Yeah.
I loved it, but I don't have a visceral fear of wild pigs.
Because it wasn't made by Spielberg.
Well, maybe that's it.
But there were so many copycats of Jaws, you know, Piranha.
Oh, yeah.
You
know, Lee Majors in Piranha. That was terrific.
Yeah, the Italians, for some reason, really seized on Jaws, perhaps because they've got such a long coastline. But they made dozens of shark attack type films as well. So not only do we credit Jaws for all of this disproportionate fear, but the industry of kind of shark porn or shark terror is its own genre.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I don't know if... The sequels to Jaws gradually got worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
Two was pretty...
And we haven't even mentioned Sharknado.
Sharknado. I mean, that was my final question. Do those movies sort of help us? Because clearly a shark in a tornado is not going to happen. So you can laugh at it a bit more than go, oh, my God, there's a storm outside. We're going to get eaten by a shark.
Yeah, they're not hyper-realistic, are they?
No.
So I think they're serving a different purpose in the marketplace, whereas Shark, because Jaws was the first, it created the real fear and the terror that was actually genuine. Sharknado, you're watching it with a bit of your tongue in your cheek.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, we're out of time, Lauren, but brilliant insights as always, and I think we've all agreed that I just need some help.
You need that,
I'll take you snorkeling.
I need some therapy.
I'll hold you in the water with a shark.
Lauren Rosewarne, thanks for being part of the wildest episode ever of Wild Science. It's been awesome.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Abby.
Thank you.
Bye. And look up Lauren Rosewarne on Twitter. Dr. Abby Scott also on Twitter. We are at our time. Time flies, but celebrate sharks, everyone, is our message. As we know, there's heaps out there. Don't be scared of them.
They are amazing. And, yeah, we just really need to learn more about them. And don't be afraid to get in the water. Don't be afraid if you see a shark. And they're just awesome. They've evolved. They've been on this planet for since before dinosaurs. So
yeah, you're awesome. It's been great. And you can look up this on Twitter as well, this version of the show.
Blow up! Smile, you son of a... Ha ha ha!